Why we have an evening session like this. The reason is if you ask Sarah not to speak early in the morning, this is what happens. So. my job is to relax the audience before the serious part of the talk begins. So what I'll do is give you some background and some motivation and a little bit of notation that Sergey will need, and then Sergey will talk about the paper proper, and then afterwards we'll both talk a little about a conjecture that's purely combinatorial that comes out of the work that we've done. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is, I guess, the oldest problem in this area that was solved. Before doing that, these are all about eigenvalues and singular values and things, and of course there are a lot of people who care about these things. The question is why should algebraic geometers and combinatorialists care about these things? And they had a lot of answers. I think one is that I don't know any other area where the problems are so simple to state and the answers so interesting and involve so many different fields. And I think that the answers are all beautiful, and they've forced us to do a lot of geometry we wouldn't have done otherwise, and symplectic geometry and combinatorics and quite a few other areas have gotten into the game. And there have even been some new results in combinatorics that have come out of this. Let me tell you about the oldest one. It's probably the best known. So this is the Schur-Horn problem. It goes back early part of the 20th century. And so in this problem, A is either real symmetric, although it's really two problems, or Hermitian, and it's an n-by-n matrix, and its eigenvalues are going to be written alpha, and in fact, one of the pieces of notation you should always remember, I'll put these things in boxes, so whenever we talk about the eigenvalues of a matrix, they're always written in decreasing order with their multiplicities, and both the diagonal entries are d1 alpha dn. And the question you ask is just what are the possibilities? So what are the possible eigenvalues compared to the diagonal entries? So it's certainly a naive question. And the answer first showed it was necessary, and Horn showed necessary and sufficient, is a very simple answer. So it's a state, but beautiful. It says that if you just take these diagonal entries and make a vector, that this vector is in the convex hull of the n factorial points the sigma in the symmetric group. So you look at those points, and someplace inside is this diagonal element. So again, it's certainly a beautiful answer, and not one you would guess immediately. One thing I think it's worth saying about this, that this paper of Horn, where he gave this complete answer to this, led quite directly to the whole theory of moment maps. If you read the early papers of Constant and Atiyah and Bott, they say they were inspired entirely by this paper of Horn with this convexity thing. And in fact, this can be interpreted, if you look at the general linear group and you look at the Lie algebra and the dual of the Lie algebra, you can identify it with the Hermitian matrices. And if you know about moment maps, there's a unitary group. Unitary group. And you can identify the dual with the Hermitian matrices. And the moment map goes from this dual to the dual of the torus. And in this case, it's just picking off the diagonal element of the Hermitian matrix. And the orbit in this thing, a co-adjoint orbit is called, is exactly the set of Hermitian matrices with a given eigenvalues. And what's the image? Well, the part of the moment map story says at least it's a convex set. And in fact, this is exactly what the convex set is. So, and I think maybe an exaggeration, but I don't think there'd be a subject called symplectic geometry if this hadn't happened. But that's, I knew at least one symplectic geometer would object to it, but it's any spectrum. But it was an enormous, I mean, some Thakur's geometry certainly wouldn't look like it did without Mohammed Matt. So that's for sure. But, okay, so the second problem starts actually earlier. A lot of people involved. In fact, Pyle was one of the earliest ones, but Horn again wrote another fantastic paper about this problem, and in fact it continued quite a bit after Horn, up until it's still continuing. And the problem asked there is, now we take A, B, and C. Again, they can either be real symmetric or Hermitian, although again it's really two problems. But, and eigenvalues will be alpha, beta, and gamma, and always assume that you've written them like this. And the question is, if C is equal to A plus B, so again, what are the possibilities? So, and what are the relations about the eigenvalues of the sum of two matrices? And so the answer to this, I'll write it. In fact, there are quite a few people involved in this, but certainly Horn should get plenty of credit. And Kliachko, I guess nearly a decade ago, was the one that started the modern work in it. And then in the work of Knudsen and Tau, if you want to justify Horn's work. And there are quite a few other people who have been in this game. But the main theorem that comes out of it is that the answer to this is I'll write some inequalities. Well, I should write. So for all I, J, K in a certain set, and this is one of the notations I have to tell you about, because Sekar is going to need it. Let me put that up here in a minute. But down here, I'll put the answer, which is a linear collection of linear inequalities that the gammas taken from the K set, the alphas from the I set, and the betas from the J set. That should be true, and also with equality if R is equal to N. So what are these things? There's I, J, and K are subsets of the indices of cardinality R, but not all subsets. So such that a literal Richardson number, C, I, J, K, is positive. And what's C, I, J, K? It's C, I, J, K is equal to C lambda of I, lambda of J, lambda of K. And I is written in this form in increasing set, I1 up to IR, and lambda of I is the partition you get from it by subtracting off the numbers from 1 up to R. So those of you who like me who like pictures, if you take...
Sorry.
So I wrote them in increasing order. I take the biggest one and subtract R, and the next biggest and subtract R minus 1. And these are the little Richardson numbers that... If you don't know what those are, you haven't been coming to enough talks. So that's something. So you need to know the R to make this correspondence. So, for example, if R is equal to 3 and you take this partition, the way I think of these things is this I is telling us, going up, what the steps are. So this would be 1, 2, 3, 1, 4, and 7 would be the set corresponding to that partition. Okay, and if I was equal to N, you take the full set, and it's just saying the trace of C has to be the trace of A plus the trace of B. So that's over here. I probably should have given another one. This condition is equivalent to saying that for all I in this set from 1 up to N of cardinality equal R, it's saying that the sum of the DIs for I and I is less than or equal to the sum from I equal 1 to R of alpha eyes. That's equivalent to this condition. Who's that due to, Percy? Do you know? But this condition is equivalent to that. That's, yeah. Is that part of Hardy, Polya, a little bit?
Short convexity.
Right. Yeah. I don't think it goes back to short, but yeah. But I think, yeah. Anyhow.
Can you strengthen that to this way?
Yeah, so of course I'm going to do some, a little bit of modifying of these things. So, yeah, I guess I'll have to do some erasing. Number three is supposed to go on the third blackboard. I guess I can do it this way, yeah. So, several points to make. So, of course, one, Del Colley said that you only have to check triples IJK when the Little Richard's number is equal to 1. So all the others follow from that. And in fact, the remarkable thing that that's exactly what you have to check, and this is by Knudsen, Tao, and Woodward. In other words, if you take all those lists of inequalities and leave out one of them with where it's equal to 1, then that there won't be. Yeah, it'll be conic sum. Okay. Of course, this is a big story, but let me a couple of other things to mention. So, another one is if those alpha, beta, and gamma are non-negative integers. Okay. So the eigenvalues that we're talking about happen to be non-negative integers. In fact, it's if and only if C alpha, beta, gamma is positive. And this is really something pretty mind-boggling when you first see it. It's saying if I want to know whether alpha, beta, and gamma occur in this eigenvalue problem, it's equivalent to the Little Richardson number being positive. And in fact, that has a lot of consequences if you say this. So, for example, all these things inductively are talking about eigenvalue problem, if you believe that. So it's saying that this eigenvalue problem is completely inductive. Or if you read it the other way, it says the Little Richardson problem is completely inductive. If you want to know whether a given Little Richardson number is positive, you just have to look about all smaller Little Richardson numbers and see if all these inequalities are satisfied. So it's quite a remarkable collection of theorems. There are a lot of related things. I don't think time to go into many of them, but for example, one of the things that was known rather early about Little Richardson numbers is, at least in the p-adic case, if you asking, so these are not matrices anymore, these are modules, generally modules over a discrete variation ring, then you know that they have types. And if this one is the type alpha, and this has type beta, and this has type gamma, it's the Little Richardson number being positive is equivalent for there being exact sequences like this. And if you take the discrete variation ring to be the p-adics, it's talking about abelian p groups, and I think many of you probably know some of that story in terms of Hall polynomials and such. And if you take the discrete variation ring to be, say, power series over C, then you get facts about matrices, the Smith normal form and such. And I've said it all with two factors, but of course, there's an analogous thing for any number of factors. You just have to look at the corresponding Little Richardson number, which means that this sure function appears in the product of these sure functions. Okay, well, I want to say talk for a couple of minutes about a third problem, just partly because it's new, and at least it's new to me. I wonder if anybody else has seen it. So, it's also a little closer in spirit to what the main thrust tonight is. It's about pieces of a matrix and their invariants related to the whole matrix. So, of course, the original Horn problem is like that. But now look at this situation. So, suppose I have a bunch of blocks of a matrix. So, this first block is N1 by N1 up to, say, NM by NM. And again, let this be real symmetric or Hermitian. So So these are real symmetric Hermitian, and we don't say anything about this. Then I want to know what's the relation between the eigenvalues of A and the eigenvalues of these things. So
the whole thing is not just those pieces, real symmetric Hermitian.
The whole thing is, right. Yeah. So this will have real eigenvalues alpha, and then A, let's call it A of T, as the eigenvalues, let's call it alpha of T. And the question is, what?
When you say Hermitian, does that include quaternionic?
In fact, it does, but. Right. So again, the question is, what are the possibilities? And the answer is, this is from a kind of modified version of something I learned from a preprint of Lee and Poon, who are our two co-authors. And it's this one. So for all I1 up to IM and K, so that's in. So again, there are subsets of the indices from 1 up to N. So N is, this is N by N, right? The sum of the N of T's is equal to N. So this, these are subsets of cardinality R in the set from 1 up to N, and the little which is the number should be non-zero. So this real polynomial should occur in the product. So this is positive, or 1, whichever you like. And the new ingredient is the number of elements in this, the T set, and I intersect it with 1 up to N of T, which this should told to R. Then exactly the same condition as always. So sum alpha K for K and K is less than or equal to the sum T equal 1 to M, and sum for I and I of T, in fact I of T intersect the first ones, alpha of T sub I. So this is again for all R, less than or equal to N, and with equality for R equal to N, which you always tend to forget. Okay. So
what's the range of the range of summation is all?
M, sorry, yeah, thank you. So I mean the zero if you go beyond that, or by convention.
Above that equals all
R. Right, so some of the cardinalities of these sets, so these sets have R elements in each one, but if you take the total number that are in the beginnings of each one, that's also equal to R. So
there are only R things on the right-hand side.
Yeah. Right, there are only R non-zero things on the right side, and the same number on the left side, which is, so they didn't state it like this, but this you can get out of it. So, so that's essentially it, but you have two homework assignments. So the first one is for the honor students, and that's to show that 2 implies 3, and the second one for ordinary students is to show that 3 implies 1. So there's a lot of people that ask us what's the relation between the Schur-Horn problem and the Horn problem, and in fact this shows at least that the big Horn problem is bigger than the small Schur-Horn problem in this sense. So now it's Sergei's turn.
This problem would also be solved, with the inequalities, by the Bernstein-Shamar paper that talks about generally branching from a group to a subgroup. Here, the big group would be the big U of A, and the subgroup would be this problem. Mm-hmm. They say what the inequalities.
You think this would come out of it?
Is it on?
Yeah.
I will.
It's autofocus.
Okay. Maybe I am out of focus. I will speak on a very much related subject of our joint work with Bill Fulton, Chikwan Lee, and U.T. Poon. And it's contained in the joint paper that is available in the archive, and the related references which I will refer to in the course of my presentation are also listed here. I have the slides available for distribution. If you want them, I can email. And this paper, I have a couple of copies of the paper, and also a copy of the slides. So let me remind you once again, even though you just heard it, but just for the sake of notation, of the solution of Horn's problem for eigenvalues. So we are looking at, so the only new piece of notation here is this H of AB, looking at the set of Hermitian matrices, which are sums of Hermitian matrices with prescribed eigenvalues. And the solution of the description of this set given by Horn and, well, there is a description of the set that you just heard in terms of inequalities labeled by triples IJK, for which the Ludwig Richardson coefficient doesn't vanish. I know you know it already, but let me just pretend you don't and remind you and tell you what the singular values of the matrix are. So we take a complex rectangular matrix and we try to diagonalize it by multiplying on the left and on the right by unitary matrices. And we get, and our goal is to get non-negative real numbers on the diagonal. All other entries zero. These numbers are canonically defined, and they are the singular values of our matrix. Another way to think about them is that they are square roots of the eigenvalues of this Hermitian matrix. X star X. This is a transpose conjugate. And if X itself is Hermitian, then the singular values are just absolute values of its eigenvalues. Yeah, well, I thought you knew it already, but yeah. Okay. This slide is so there is an analog of the eigenvalue problem for singular values. So we ask which triples can occur as singular values of A, B, and C. And the solution of this problem given by Klitschko is that you write this identity. Okay, a matrix like this. If you know the singular values of C, has eigenvalues which are the singular values and the negative singular values of C. And so now we know the eigenvalues of all three matrices, so these numbers should satisfy the Horn inequalities, and it's a theorem that this is necessary and sufficient for the original problem. Notice that these Horn inequalities will be labeled by triples from this set LR2NM, because they come from the original Horn problem for matrices of double size. This will create some problems down the road for us, because we will want to somehow reconcile small Littwood Richardson numbers with big ones. And here is our main theorem, or rather part of it. So, suppose we want to understand the relation between the singular values of an off-diagonal block X. Okay, so here, so X is an off-diagonal block of a Hermitian or complex symmetric or real symmetric matrix of this form or of this form. And we know that the singular values of X are given numbers. Okay? And we want the singular values, not eigenvalues, which would sort of sounds more natural, but for example, for complex symmetric, it's not as natural. We want singular values of the big matrix to be given numbers. Okay? So in the Hermitian case, this would mean that the or real symmetric, the eigenvalues should be plus or minus these numbers, right? Okay, and we want the relationship, once again, between the singular values of the off-diagonal block and the singular values of the whole thing. Okay, so when can this happen? What's the relationship between these two sets of numbers? First of all, I'm not telling it to you right away. First of all, the big surprise is that this is equivalent to requiring the eigenvalues, which are plus or minus these numbers, to have exactly these signs. Okay, so this is so there are 2 to the n possibilities, but if you just leave one, the answer is exactly the same. It's also a surprise that the answers in all these cases are the same, which a priori is not.
Is that true for other sign patterns? Just that one? Is that just a special sign
pattern? Another sign pattern.
No. This is very, very special.
That's the special
pattern. That's the pattern. I mean, there is another one, negative gamma 1. Yeah. Right. But that's it. And finally, there are Horn-type inequalities. And the Horn-type inequalities are just like what you saw before, except there is a 2 here. And here, what you do is you interlace. So this 2i minus r 1, you know, these are just, you take the odd numbers and you pick them according to the set I, and the even numbers and you pick them according to the set j. So it's the same kind of thing. I seem to be out of focus again, but... Okay, so a couple of quick remarks. First of all, as we just heard, it's enough to check the inequalities where the Littwood Richardson number is 1. And secondly, for a trivial reason, we can actually fix these matrices X and X star in advance, because otherwise we could do something to multiply by block diagonal matrices on the right and the left and fix them any way we please. So, and that won't change the singular values of the whole thing. So there's a... don't want to put that slide on the other projector because it's... I want to keep the main result there. So let me illustrate it quickly. This is an example. P equals 2, n equals 4. So the problem here is because I can choose these two. I can fix these two in advance. So saying that they have singular values x1 and x2 is the same as just prescribing them to be diagonal ones. Okay. So now I have stars here. Put stars any way you please. The question is what can be the singular values of such a 4x4 matrix? And the answer is given by these inequalities, which come from all possible Littwood Richardson Horn triples. Okay, I don't think I have time to explain why. This is empty, empty, empty. So, you know, product of the 1 times 1 equals 1, right? This is empty, 1 box, 1 box. 1 box, empty, 1 box. Empty, empty, empty again, but with a larger R. So there aren't many possibilities where P equals 2. Okay?
So Sergey, as you formulated this right here, it's similar. There's a class of problems called matrix completion problems, where you fix some entries of a matrix and you let the other one vary. So you have a linear space of matrices, and you're wondering if you can select a matrix in that linear, in this affine space of matrices that has certain eigenvalues. This has a very similar flavor to this matrix completion problem as you formulated this.
Is it solved in any way?
The matrix completion problem, there are necessary criteria.
Yeah, I don't think.
And there's a huge literature on it.
Uh-huh.
But this is very similar to that. It's different, but it's very similar.
Okay. It looks like a special, very special case of that general problem.
Charlie Johnson is an endless writer on matrix completion.
Uh-huh.
Joachim Rosenthal may have the best result.
Okay. So, there was a wonderful theorem. Unfortunately, I have nothing to do with it. in which we, rather than talking about singular values of the big matrix, talk about its eigenvalues, which is more natural, right? If Z is Hermitian, let's say. So, you ask a question: when there exists an Hermitian matrix of this size, of this form, where X has prescribed singular values and the whole thing has prescribed eigenvalues, and the answer is given by Horn-type inequalities with this 2 here, almost like we saw just before. Okay? It's a wonderful theorem. We actually included a complete proof of it in our paper, so it's all self-contained, and I would love to talk about it, but I don't have time. So I will skip the proof of this equivalence, which is part of the, actually, if you compare it to that, and I will soon explain, it basically the equivalence of these two immediately implies the equivalence of these two, because here I am also fixing the eigenvalues, right? So it's very similar. Okay, so it's just in the special case where you have these particular eigenvalues, that's what it becomes. Okay? And now I remove this. I still want to keep my main result on that slide. And so, as I said, applying the theorem that I just removed, I obtain this equivalence in the main theorem. So I will concentrate on the other equivalence in this presentation. Okay, so how about condition A? So condition A concerns Hermitian matrices which have these singular values, so eigenvalues plus or minus those singular values, right? And so for each of the 2 to the n choices of signs, we can get those kinds of inequalities that I just removed, right? We can write this theorem of Lipun and Fulton and apply it to that particular choice of signs, right? And saying that A is equivalent to B in that theorem amounts to saying that the inequalities that we will obtain for the alternating choice of signs, for this special one, are uniformly the weakest, meaning that that will include all the rest. I wanted to illustrate it, so I have an example, but I don't have time to show it. But when you ask me to send the slides, it will be there. Okay. So now, actually, more is true. You don't need this matrix to be Hermitian. Just any complex matrix of this form. But the condition remains that the singular values of X and Y are the same. This is a somewhat strange artificial condition. But, and this of course is a yet weaker condition than the one on the other slide. So this, I fix singular values of X, fix singular values of Y to be the same. Okay? And fix singular values of the whole thing, and ask when this happens, and we claim that this also happens, you know, in those situations. Okay? So a more natural problem would be to fix singular values of x, fix singular values of y. Not necessarily the same. And ask what could be the singular values of the whole thing. Unfortunately, we have no idea how to solve this problem. It's pretty non-trivial even for 2x2 matrices, believe it or not. When you just know the x and y are just complex numbers, and you just fix the absolute value of x, fix the absolute value of y, and ask what can be the singular values of this 2x2 matrix. And it's actually a published paper by R.C. Thompson, you know, where he did just that. And surprisingly, the answer is given by linear inequalities. It's surprising because on the surface of it, you know, what are these singular values? They're square roots of something. And so when you try to decipher it, when you just try to encode it, you get some quadratic inequalities. But these quadratic inequalities, you know, like square plus square equals zero, you know, is the same. Well, anyway, these quadratic inequalities can be, turns out that they're equivalent to a system of linear inequalities. Okay, maybe. Okay, yeah, no, I still want to keep that. Here is another related problem, also solved by Thompson. So if you fix just singular values of x, what can be the singular values of the whole thing? This is completely solved. Turns out to be easy. The answer is nice. No Littlewood Richardson. But still, good to know that these things are known. So, okay. So now, sketch of the proof. And that's of that theorem, which remains on the left screen. So, remember, D was this statement where we allowed x and y to be different. Okay, so that's the weakest form, and that follows from everything else. And so B implies A implies D. These implications are trivial, and I already told you that B equals C, you know, was done before. So what remains is to prove that D implies C. Okay, so D, you don't have D on that slide, but here I reproduce it for your convenience. So we start with a matrix C, in this country, I'm not sure, of this form. X and Y have given singular values, Z has given singular values, and we want to deduce those inequalities, C, those inequalities. Okay? Recall that they are labeled by triples in the set. Okay. Now, here is a trick that does part of it. So these stars should be P and Q here. Okay. So we take this matrix. We know its singular values. This matrix has the same singular values. This is easy to see. Just conjugating by diagonal matrix with square root of minus 1 or something like that. And you get this. Okay, the sum of them is this matrix. This is easy. And we know its singular values. They are twice because there is a 2 here. And x and y have the same thing. So they are twice s1, twice s2, twice s2. Okay, you know, these are what they are. So we know the singular values on the right, because we know singular values of x and y, and we know singular values here and here. So we know by Klatchko's theorem that certain inequalities apply. Which inequalities? Certain inequalities labeled by the set, you know, coming from the big Littlewood-Richardson game. Okay? They are labeled by this set LR2NM. Okay? And one of inequalities of that form, I shouldn't say of those, but of inequalities of that form, boils down precisely to this, but the problem is we need to show that the corresponding triple is good. Okay, that it belongs to the right set, to this big Ledwidge Richardson set. Okay. Right. So I'm suddenly lost, but
yeah.
Right. But you seem to be okay.
You seem to show that those are in the list. Those are in the horn list. You need to show those guys are in the horn list.
Right. Yeah. But okay. So we need to deduce this. So we need to show that for all triples here, this holds, right? So we know certain triple belongs to this list, but if we knew certain other triple belong to this list, then we could use Klitschko's theorem and we would get what we need. Okay, and I'm not telling you what exactly is the relationship between the two triples, but actually I will in a moment.
So it shows that if a non-zero Lobertz coefficient non-zero there, then it's non-zero there.
That's right, but certain other guy is non-zero there.
Yes.
Right, and this is in the big set, and that is in the small set. Okay, and now I'm telling you. Well, maybe I. Doesn't matter. Now I'm telling you what exactly it is. So what it boils down to? It boils down to showing, okay, that if certain triple is in the small Ledwidge Richardson set, then certain other triple is in the big Ledwidge Richardson set.
Is that FFG?
Right, FFG.
Okay.
And this. Okay, so how are F and G constructed from I, J, and K? And the recipe is, which, I mean, you just decipher what I said before. There was nothing deep here. This is, okay? The recipe is that you take the set I, and you move it to the odd position. You take the set J, move it to the even position. And you take the set, and this gives you F. And you do the same to K and again K to get G. Okay, you double it up. And so we need to show that if this triple is corresponds to non-vanishing Ledwidge Richardson, then this triple corresponds. So now we just need to show to do some combinatorics, right?
In fact, is the coefficient bounded? I mean, do you inject one set into the other?
Okay, you are ahead of me. Yes, that's what's coming. So, in fact, we have an inequality for these Ledwidge Richardson coefficients. So, if not just if one of them is positive, then another is positive, but actually one is less than or equal than another. Now, what does it mean in the language of partitions that most of you are more used to than this language of sets, I, J, K? In this language, can be rephrased as follows. So let's take the inverse to the two quotient map. Okay? The two quotient map is a map between if you take a Young diagram which is decomposable into dominoes, then there is a standard way to biject it to a pair of Young diagrams. So there is a general construction of Rimhook lattices, which, and this is the case of 2, you know, the parameter equal to 2. I cannot tell you more right now, I don't have time. The definition you saw, it's just there, but there is a nice theory about these objects. Okay, so we want to show this kind of inequality, and luckily enough, there is a... Oh. So I'm running. Need to finish. Okay. There is a version of the Ledwidge Richardson rule which is exactly suited to proving this kind of thing, namely a version due to Carrère and Leclerc that describes Ledwidge Richardson as number of certain Yamanuchi domino tableau, and I could tell you what those are. It's also in the paper, or you can read the original paper by Carrère and Leclerc, and using that, it's very easy to prove this lemma. And that's the end of the proof, basically, of our main result. Now, what can we do with this? I'm just totally out of time. Okay, one thing we could do with it is to prove the following corollary. Okay, maybe what I should do is just forget the slides. Somehow thought slides are faster, but without slides. So let me just tell you what problem can we solve with this theorem. Okay, it's Horn's problem for a combined list of eigenvalues. So you just heard about the Horn's problem. You have two Hermitian matrices. You know eigenvalues of this, of A and B, and you wonder what can be the eigenvalues of A plus B. Now, let's say you know the eigenvalues of A and B, but you don't know which ones are the eigenvalues of A and which ones are the eigenvalues of B. Okay? So, distribute them between A and B any way you please, and then come up with any two matrices A and B that have those combined eigenvalues, and then add them up, and what can you get as eigenvalues of the sum? Okay? So the answer is, of course, a priori, the answer is, okay, there are two n choose n ways to distribute these eigenvalues between the two matrices, right? And then in each case, we have Horn's inequalities, right? So we get a cone, and so we get a union of 2 to the n cones. Okay, a lot of cones. And the theorem, the corollary that I didn't show you, says that all of these cones are actually contained in a single cone, in one of those. Namely, you need to distribute these eigenvalues this way. Okay? I couldn't show it on the slide. So, you toss them just one by one to A and to B, to A and to B. Okay. So that's one of the corollaries. And corollary of this corollary and this statement, right? This statement, that a triple occurs in the eigenvalue problem if and only if the corresponding Lifford Richardson number is positive. A triple made of non-negative integers. Okay? So all of this implies that if you have a bunch of positive integers, okay, and you want to split them into two partitions, okay, and you want to take sure functions indexed by those partitions, and you want to multiply those sure functions, okay, then the largest product will be obtained if those numbers were ordered in decreasing order initially and then dealt this way. Okay?
Is this thing that the number of... No, it says that the terms of Shapir are strictly dominated, but are the numbers all...
That's right. That's right. So, okay, now I show it to you. So, we only know how to prove, and I gave you a proof, essentially, that if one coefficient appears here, then it appears there. Okay, so the support of the sure function expansion of that special product contains the supports of sure function expansions of all other products. And we conjecture that actually it's coefficient-wise domination. In fact, I don't want to call it a conjecture, but it's just something that I don't know counterexamples to. But, okay, call it a conjecture if you want. Uh-huh. Especially if you prove it, then... that any time you have a pair of sure functions and another pair of sure functions, and the support of this product of sure functions contains the support of that product of sure functions, then, in fact, coefficient-wise, this product dominates this product. I don't know a single counterexample to this statement. Okay. Now, Bill will kill me.
So when Jameter sees
this kind of problem that was saying that little bits of number on a small Grassmannian should be less than or equal to a little bits of number from a big Grassmannian, and you look around for a geometric reason for it, and there is a nice, what should be a nice simple geometric reason for this. So if you're looking at so I'm going to use notation that I'm supposing that I have so this is the Schubert variety corresponding to that index I that we're talking about, and saying that the little richness of the number is non-zero says that if I take three general flags, so, and I guess the right thing is something like this, E, F, and G, so these are general flags, the little richness of the number, they're C, I, J, K of these linear spaces in this. And what we should do is, so this is in the Grassmannian, I've forgotten your notation, was it, I think, P-planes and R? So this is a linear subspace of CR, and the obvious thing when you're trying to double everything is to look at L plus L sitting inside of CR plus CR, and put this in three Schubert varieties. In fact, so this thing is going to be in, is the notation F was one of them, so let's call it A dot, and it's that F again, another one, B dot, and effect G, another one for C dot, right? And so I have to tell you what A, B, and C are. In fact, I'll tell you what they are. You personally will like it. You do it by shuffling again. I'm going to take them all in split form. So this is F I minus 1 plus EI, and that's the even ones. So you take E1 and then E1 plus F1, E2, and so on. That gives you a flag in here. And you do a similar thing for the Bs. So that's sometimes backwards. So, and then the B2i is what you expect. And the Cs, you do it with the third one, just like the... So it doesn't matter which one you deal first for the Cs. And in fact, so... first little exercise is to check that this is true. So that's a simple dimension count. This is dimensions from intersections of something and dimensions of this or something. So look at this and see what it says. It says we've got this many of these, and I'm producing, so for each one of those, I'm producing something in here. Right? So that seems to be trying to tell us that this number is less than or equal to this number, and the number measuring these. Okay? Well, that's true provided this is a proper intersection. And it's not so easy to tell whether this is a proper intersection. So that's the question. Is this proper? And see, these aren't general flags. I mean, two of them you can make pretty general, but you can't have three flags that are split like this to be general. And so how can you figure out? Well, proper is, at least to me, I don't know how to do that at all. But transversal, you could hope. So stronger conjecture is this transversal. If it were, then it would be proper, and that would say that the number of these is less than or equal to the number of these, and that would be the right proof, the geometric proof of that fact that Sergei gave a combinatorial proof of. Well, how can you tell about transversality? Well, you know the tangent space, in fact, at a point L to the Grassmannian is, in fact, homomorphisms from L into, let's see, R mod L, I guess. And in fact, it's not hard to say what the tangent space to L of a Schubert variety is. So if you're at a point in one of these, in fact, any Schubert variety, of E, so it's a subspace of this thing. If I stay in the Schubert cell, it's a smooth subspace, so we can look at the tangent space. And in fact, this is a result of Belcalli. It must be known earlier, but I haven't found it earlier. It's a set of phis from L to... I mean, well,
it's enough, but I think the proof doesn't write it down.
Yeah, and that's certainly not hard once you say it. This is a funny way to say it. It's the quickest way. Phi of, if I take EI intersect L, this is contained in EI plus L over L for all I. It looks strange because you don't see the Schubert conditions there at all, but of course they're hidden there because the dimension of these sets depends on the Schubert condition. So we can compute the tangent space. Well, in fact, what's the tangent space in this big thing? So here we're in corresponding a two p plane to 2R space. Well, of course, you're looking at L plus L to this thing mod L plus L. And what that's just in the big space, you're looking at the 2x2 matrices with and the tangent space to L of the regular, well, in fact, 2x2 matrices whose entries are homomorphisms from L to CR mod L. That's for this thing. Okay. So all I have to do is write down the conditions to be tangent to the big Schubert variety and check that things are right. So you write down those conditions and look at them, and what comes out, so a fair amount of manipulation, but what comes out is you're looking at a matrix like this. And each one of these is a matrix from L to CR mod L. And I wanted to, what does it mean to be in this, tangent to this, tangent to this, and tangent to this? And it should mean that you're zero. If it does, that's a transverse intersection. So you look at what are the conditions. Well, in this condition, it says exactly, in this corner, it says exactly that you're tangent to this original thing, and this thing, and this thing. So that one is zero, because they're transverse. And this one is also, these are old. But when you write down the other two, something quite surprising happens, and you find a new thing happening. In fact, it's the same for both of these. So, and you analyze, and what you notice is that the condition you've written down is a condition of tangency for a completely different Schubert problem. Right? So these will vanish. So if another Schubert problem, so Schubert problem has can be solved. And what is that Schubert problem? So again, a bunch of manipulation that I certainly can't do on the blackboard. So I start with lambda and mu. So in fact, those are the lambda and mu corresponding to this. And I produce from them two new partitions, which I call lambda star and mu star. Okay. And here's the formulas. So the ith one and lambda star is lambda I. I subtract I, and then I look at the number of j such that mu j minus j is greater or equal to lambda I minus I. I add that back on. This is a very strange looking thing, but it's exactly what comes out of this. And say mu j star is, I take mu j minus j, I add 1 to it for good luck, and then I take the number of I such that lambda I minus I is strictly greater than mu j minus j. Okay? It isn't even obvious, but it's quite simple. If these are two partitions, these are two partitions. If these lie in a rectangle, these lie in the same rectangle. The total number of boxes here is the same as the total number of boxes there. So all of that's very easy to check. And what we need to know is that if this little ridge, which is the number, is positive, that means there's an L over there. I want to know that this little ridge is the number is positive.
What little ridge number is it?
For any mu. Right? So in fact, the strong conjecture that we make is that the usual way that Jager was talking about. So this should be true for all mu. Right? So that's a complete conjecture on this little board here. And it's what seems to be is quite common that you can go from a pair of partitions to a different pair of partitions and make the difference. So what it's saying is that I multiply these two sure functions and subtract these two sure functions, the result is sure positive. And I would have thought it's fairly rare that you can move around without getting bigger boxes and having that. And this shows it's not very rare, at least if you believe this. And Andrew's book has written a nice program that, so now we know that if lambda and mu fit inside a rectangle and the rectangle's area is less than 40, no matter what mu doesn't have to fit in it, this is true. So that's a fair number of little riches of numbers.
So what happens if you iterate this? Do you apply
the
to the star?
Right, so of course, that keeps getting more and more positive, but.
It's not involution.
No. Yeah, and so in fact, Sergey has a nicer way to think of this in terms of a combinatorial thing that's completely equivalent. And why don't you end by putting that up?
Okay, yeah. So, just maybe to repeat again. So, what's surprising here is that what we want to show is that if some small irreducible number doesn't vanish, then the big doesn't vanish, okay? We prove it by saying, okay, it doesn't vanish. I'm just recapping what Bill said. Doesn't vanish, this means those Schubert varieties intersect transversally. So we take a point in the intersection and we manufacture from that something that should lie in the big refinement and in the right intersection of Schubert varieties, but we don't know if that intersection is transversal. So it's a question from a big variety, but then somehow, magically, it drops down again because of this argument. To a question about small Lagrangians. So as Bill said, but it's worth repeating, the sum of the sizes of these two guys is exactly the same. Okay. Now it's very hard to remember these formulas, and I just have a for doing it. So I have a slide, so you will get free of charge this conjecture in the way Bill formulated it. So if you didn't make a copy,
it's like a formula for mu star, which is
right. It's here.
Also,
that's mu star.
It's going to take.
But I'm going to take it away, okay? And I'm right. Let me just so that you would remember it. Let me restate it in the language of subsets, and that will be. This is just for the chair of the session. That's the last slide and the punchline.